The TV File, the ultimate Buccaneers podcast with Nate Lundy.
Writer for PewterReport.com on Twitter at PewterReport. Zach Shapiro is with us to talk about the Buccaneers. Zach, coming into this season now as we are in week one, you look at this team and obviously so much of the expectations fall on the shoulders of Jameis Winston. How have you thought he's been here going through the preseason and through training camp getting ready for this season?
I think Jameis has been really impressive throughout training camp. We've seen him sort of command the huddle and just understand the offense, show a much better handle of the offense as a whole. Of course, keeping Dirk Koetter, promoting him from offensive coordinator to head coach, that was the main reason, is because they wanted to keep that continuity and have Winston sort of come into his own in the same offense and take that next step. And I think, you know, aside from a shaky start in Philadelphia that he recovered from pretty quickly in week one, and a slow and a rough game in Jacksonville for the brief time he was in, he responded in that week three, the most significant preseason game, obviously the most telling, by completing, you know, like 16 of 25 passes for over 250 yards, a couple of touchdowns, and these were impressive throws. I mean, really stretching the ball downfield, keeping his eyes down enough to keep him out by the end of the half. I mean, the plan was for three quarters, but he showed enough. The offensive line was staying up tempo and able to kind of keep their rhythm, and the receivers were taking advantage of Winston's play. So I think he really had the offense coming together in that game. So far, there's a lot of optimism surrounding Jameis Winston.
Let's talk about that offense for a bit. Last year really felt like kind of an anomaly when you saw the final statistics for Mike Evans. You know, only three touchdowns. That's just not something that you would expect, especially with this offense. But let's talk about the weapons that Jameis has at his disposal, both the receivers as well as the tight ends. Give me your breakdown of the offense and who he's got on the receiving end of the passes.
Well, there were a lot of questions heading into camp, and I think before week three there was some concern as to who was behind Mike Evans. He's looked good so far, cleaned up some of the drop issues that we saw last season. But, you know, the tight end was a battle between Cameron Brate and Austin Seferian-Jenkins. One of the national stories, just because of Seferian-Jenkins being a second-round pick and sort of being slowed by injuries and, you know, having a little bit of a run-in with the coach. So we've kind of seen that develop, but no one's really – been the clear favorite. No one sort of emerged from that group. And among the wide receivers, you know, Vincent Jackson, 33 now, but looks productive against the Browns again. You know, that was really a game for everyone. And then Adam Humphries, who is the starting slot receiver, the Dirk Koetter named him that early in the season. He has experience from last year, sort of the success story as an undrafted free agent, now starter and in going into his second season. But there are certainly some question marks at the receiver position as far as who's behind Mike Evans. I don't think they're overly concerned. I think they're really confident. But we'll see if Vincent Jackson has lost a step, or if he can come back for another strong season. If Mike Evans can keep the drops to a minimum, and if Adam Humphries can really fill that role as their inside guy.
In the running game, we look in the backfield. Obviously, Doug Martin back there for the Bucs. What's the expectation for Martin going into this year after, you know, 1,400 yards last year? Is the expectation for him to hit that mark again?
I think just by looking at the deal he got over the offseason, that is the expectation. They've called themselves a run-first offense. And so, you know, they got Charles Sims back there, but Doug Martin is the unquestioned, you know, lead back of that group, of that tandem. And I think they're expecting the same. I think they see him as a guy who can touch the ball 20 times, 20 to 25 times, catch a little bit out of the backfield, and really be that bell cow and repeat, have a second straight season, a Pro Bowl season, which he hasn't been able to do yet in his career. You know, four seasons, two great ones, two sandwiched in between that were a little iffy. But, you know, Doug Martin, he got the contract. They see him as one of the top running backs in the NFL, and they really have high expectations for him this season.
Well, obviously, if you're in the NFC South, it means Drew Brees, it means Matt Ryan, it means Cam Newton. So let's talk about the defense. First of all, up front, the defensive line and the linebackers, you know, as you look at them, Zach, is the front seven solid, or do they still need to show you something?
Well, that's been the most pleasantly surprising unit during the preseason. I think they had a league 16 sacks. They went out during the offseason and signed Robert Ayers, who was coming off his a career year for him with 9 sacks with the Giants. And he's sort of brought that edginess or that nastiness, as some of the teammates call it, to the defensive line, which I think is something that they needed. And then, of course, going into the draft, Noah Spence was a guy I believe they had really high who fell to them. So they were ecstatic when he dropped to number 39 for maybe some off-field issues that he had in college. But those are two guys that they really look at that can bolster the defensive line. And so far in the preseason, that has been arguably their best unit. Of course, with Gerald McCoy being the anchor and the captain of the defense, the defensive line has looked solid. They have some depth with Clinton McDonald returning, a veteran there. Akeem Spence, a guy, you know, a younger player, but someone who's been a presence in the run game. And then looking back at the linebacking core, you have Levante David, who is arguably their best player on defense, you know, coming off his first Pro Bowl season. And then Quan Alexander, who really took a jump last season as a fourth-round pick, you know, the gem that they really found last year out of LSU. He was suspended at the end, and that was, like you said, that the four-game collapse. You know, I don't know if it was a coincidence. A lot of players have said that they clearly needed him, not blaming him for the losses, but saying how important his presence was on defense. And so I think just as much as Jameis Winston can take a step in year two, I think Quan Alexander can really emerge as the leader of this front seven.
What about the secondary, Brent Grimes and crew? What's your assessment of them as you get ready to start the season?
Once the weakest unit in the secondary, it now looks pretty deep. Vernon Hargraves has been as advertised, the first-round pick, with 2 interceptions in the preseason and really kind of inserting himself from the nickel role to a starting, you know, right or left side corner. And then Brent Grimes has made some mistakes in the preseason, most notably in the week 3 game. He was one of the few players that didn't have his best performance. But I don't think there's been any loss of confidence. I don't really sense that. Dirk Hutter is someone who saw him in Atlanta. And then, of course, Mike Smith was his head coach over there in Atlanta. So they know him well. He knows the defense well. He's a veteran, which they don't have a lot of on defense. So that's another positive. I think Brent Grimes has done what he's been expected to do to this point. Of course, the big test in week 1 against Julio Jones, you know, you mentioned the quarterbacks and of course the with Breeze and Matt Ryan and Cam Newton. But they also have their weapons, and that'll be telling to see how Brent Grimes matches up against, you know, arguably the best receiver in the NFL.
Zach, do you like the fact that they're opening up with a divisional opponent? Do you think that's a good way to start off the season in terms of giving them a test up against the Falcons?
I do. I think this is big for a young team trying to turn the corner. You know, you want to start off with momentum early on. And this is a team that they beat twice last season, despite all the bad things that happened. You know, Atlanta was 2 positive games. So I think this is important for them to show that they can still build on the progress and they haven't taken a step back. And then, like Dirk Cutter pointed out this week, this game counts as double. So if they're able to pull it off, you know, it's a loss for a divisional opponent, it's a win for them, and it's even more confidence, I think, heading into a really tough game in Arizona. But I think this is the best thing that they could have gotten on their schedule, starting off on the road, a chance to gain that early confidence against a division team and show, you know, you're up for the NFC South.
Zach, there are some that say that the Bucs have a good shot at being able to be a wild card team in the NFC, and you know, with as good as the Panthers are, I think that for the Bucs to make it to the playoffs, that's probably the path, is a wild card. What's the one thing that is going to have to click for this team in order to make sure that they are a wild card team in the NFC?
Well, I think you just have to start with the offensive side of the ball. I think if Jameis Winston doesn't regress, if he can take the next step forward, that'll really boost the confidence of everyone around them. And I think that'll help, of course, the offense click, but also the defense sort of come together too and realize, you know, what if they can just do this, they have a quarterback, they have an offense that can really lead the way. And, you know, I think the wild card does look like a possibility, especially with the injury to Teddy Bridgewater. Sort of, you know, you don't want to count Minnesota out, but that certainly makes it tougher for them. And you look around the league, you know, no one's predicting Tampa to win the division, but maybe they can compete for that 5th or 6th spot.
Zach Shapiro has been our guest covering the Bucs for PewterReport.com on Twitter at PewterReport. Zach, really appreciate the time this week. Thanks, and enjoy the game this weekend.
Thanks, Nate. Really appreciate it.
Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick's with us. Stick around.
around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball off to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am an IA, and I'm not. From the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line, Ezekiel Elliott, could be a huge plus for them, but that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Mike Mularkey. Goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team that that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? You don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like Mike Mularkey. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson is pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. You're going to play great defense. Typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bills team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan, or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do. More so than any team in the league, they morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you, and we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere it's, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've played the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience, one team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five, Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes a national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.